88.7 WNHU. I guess one BBC song deserves another. That is for BBC Mike hanging out in Bridgeport. This evening, Beatles there with the Coasters tune called Youngblood from Live at the BBC. We also heard from the White Album, Happiness is a Warm Gun, and Ringo Starr with the single released 41 years ago this past week, It Don't Come Easy. Written by Ringo with some help from George Harrison. Here at WNHU, you're with Ken Michaels. And Strange Fruit is the name of a new documentary on the history of the Beatles record company, Apple. And I must say that this is a real treat. For any Beatle fan that has had some interest in the artists other than the Beatles themselves on the Apple label, I really recommend seeing this. It is due out on DVD April 24th. It focuses, as it should, on the record company. Although the Beatles company Apple Corps also had divisions like Apple Films, Apple Electronics, and the Apple Clothes Boutique, which is lightly touched on in this documentary. But what I love most about Strange Fruit are the interviews featured, especially one with a guy named Ron Griffiths. This guy was the original bass player in the band The Ivies, who later became Badfinger. And he left the group right when they were having their initial success with Paul McCartney's song Come and Get It. Guitarist Tom Evans took over the bass role, and the group added new member Joey Molland as lead guitarist, and together with Tom, Pete Ham, and drummer Mike Gibbons, became the lineup most associated with Badfinger. But where Ron Griffiths is concerned, I've never seen an interview with him. He's someone I've always been curious about. One of my favorite songs from the group is Dear Angie, which Ron wrote and you can find on the Magic Christian Music album. The fact that the producers dug up this guy means a lot to me, especially since Ron Griffiths and Joey Molland are all you have left from the early years of Badfinger, with Pete Ham, Tom Evans, and Mike Gibbons all having passed on. And yes, Joey Molland is interviewed here as well. Another key interview is Jackie Lomax, a friend of the Beatles, a member of the bands The Undertakers and the Lomax Alliance, who was actually managed by Brian Epstein. But unfortunately, Brian died before he could really help him. And John Lennon offered him a music publishing deal with Apple, and George Harrison offered him a record deal. George produced his only album for Apple called Is This What You Want, which included a star-studded cast of musicians like Paul, Ringo, and Eric Clapton. Despite a strong effort all around and having a George Harrison penned song, Sour Milk Sea, to jumpstart his career, Jackie's music couldn't sell. His own story, through his own perspective, is interesting, and you can't help but feel sympathetic for the guy. Another key interview is Gary Van Sciok, the bass player from Elephant's Memory, sharing his memories of Apple and working with John, as well as an interview with New York street musician David Peel. A few Beatles authors, Stefan Granados, who wrote Those Were the Days, An Unofficial History of the Beatles Organization, and Chris Ingham, author of The Rough Guide to the Beatles, paint a fairly accurate picture of where Apple succeeded and failed. They're very candid in expressing their views. Apple had some success beyond the Beatles group and solo music with artists like Mary Hopkin and Badfinger, but you couldn't help but notice several other artists that went on to have incredible success only after leaving Apple, most noticeably James Taylor and Billy Preston. And even a group that most people aren't even aware of were on Apple, the Hot Chocolate Band, who later became simply Hot Chocolate and scored with hits like You Sexy Thing and Everyone's a Winner. Why didn't most of the Apple artists enjoy success? Was it a case that the music wasn't promoted well, or was the material really not that strong or in line with what radio was playing at the time? That's where the authors come in and offer their opinions. And one of the few criticisms I have to make about Strange Fruit is that the documentary relies too much on what the authors have to say. And while they are certainly knowledgeable on the subject, much of what they say is strictly opinion. One of the authors said that Magic Christian Music was the best of the Badfinger albums on Apple. Again, that's just opinion. I think many Badfinger fans would disagree. But why is that even relevant? I've often wondered why Badfinger, despite having some success, weren't a bigger band to me. They deserve 10 times the record sales they got, but there are many reasons why certain bands succeed and others don't. A fascinating moment in the documentary is revealing that in order for an artist to be signed to Apple, one of the Beatles had to approve it. Unfortunately, a lot of artists slipped through the cracks, like, believe it or not, David Bowie, Grace Slick, and the progressive rock band Yes. Fleetwood Mac was a consideration, since George Harrison's sister-in-law, Jenny Boyd, was married to Mick Fleetwood. Even Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young were a possible signing, but the Beatles had trouble moving forward and they couldn't finalize the deals for these artists. It just goes to show you that as brilliant as the Beatles are as artists, it doesn't mean the same can be true for them as businessmen. Apple was supposed to be an artist-friendly label where anyone who had hopes of having a record deal could go to them without having to beg on their knees for one. That's not how most of the artists with Apple were signed. A very simple fact in telling this story, and they do this well, is that part of the reason why Apple fell apart is because the band that started it all were falling apart. After Alan Klein was appointed the Beatles' business manager, Paul stopped being involved, and it was really George Harrison who carried the mantle and continued to heavily work with Apple artists. Despite a sincere effort on George's part, the artists he worked with and produced besides Jackie Lomax, like Billy Preston, Doris Troy, the Radha Krishna Temple, and Lon and Derek Van Eaton, didn't really sell well at all. But the biggest criticism I could make about Strange Fruit is that I wish there were more people being interviewed. There are plenty of other artists that are still around that would have made this documentary even stronger than it is. It should be noted that this is an unauthorized documentary, so you don't have any input from Paul or Ringo. But it would have been nice to see people like James Taylor, the usually private Mary Hopkin, Ronnie Spector, members of the Radha Krishna Temple, the Hot Chocolate Band, John Tavener, and Yoko Ono, who, as one of the authors pointed out, along with Badfinger, was the most prolific artist on Apple, also the most expensive to produce. I certainly wish Peter Asher was interviewed as well. He was the head of A&R at Apple in the beginning, and he was responsible for bringing James Taylor on board. Strange Fruit is almost 3 hours long, and while the interviews here are strong, to get a few more key figures involved for interviews would have made this even more powerful. So all in all, I would definitely recommend this documentary, because despite a few shortcomings, it is well done, and I also don't think that Apple themselves will ever produce their own documentary. With so many people having passed in the history of Apple, like Billy Preston, Doris Troy, Derek Taylor, three of the members of Badfinger, and of course, John and George, it's a shame this documentary wasn't done earlier when these people were alive, but within its limitations, it is definitely a worthwhile documentary. And we're going to give you the chance to win a copy of this on DVD sometime next hour with one of my easier Beatles trivia questions. In the meantime, this is a special dedication going out. Let me get the paper out here. From Brian to Elsie in Yonkers, Paul McCartney here at 88.7 WNHU. I know it is.